and welcome to the podcast where passion and purpose collide. We are on a mission to interview women and the occasional token man about how their passion and purpose have collided to create healthy relationships and profitable businesses. I'm Elizabeth Denham, publisher of The Franchise Woman, and I'm here with Rebecca Monet, Chief Scientist of Zoracle Profiles. How are you doing, Rebecca?
I am fabulous. Happy Wednesday to you.
Happy Wednesday, and we will start off with our traditional roses and thorns. What are your roses and thorns for the week?
So I was giving this some thought, and I've been noticing this thing in my life the last, I don't know, several months, where I am, less focused on listening than I used to be. Mm-hmm. So, and I know it's because I got a thousand things going on, and those folks that know me know I'm endlessly curious and I want to know everything about everything, especially the human beings. And so I'm usually fully engaged, and I got this incredible patience to listen through just about anything. But I'm noticing more recently that I am becoming much more direct and cutting things off. It's like all the things that I kind of admired in other business owners, where they just get to the bottom line fast and make every minute count and every communication is a direct communication. You know, I'm that kumbaya person all of these years, and with the patience of Job almost. And so the thorn is, I don't like this new kind of barracuda that's coming out in my personality. I'm becoming much more of a boom, 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 bottom line kind of person, get to the point kind of person. I don't like that part, but it's getting results. So that's kind of the thorn is, I just don't like it. You know, it's not really who I am. But the positive is I'm getting a whole bunch of stuff done and much faster than ever in my entire life. So I don't know if this is has
I
to do.
I think it's a good thing, you know, cut to the chase, get it all done, you know.
Boom, 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 you know, kind of thing. I think some of it too, Elizabeth, is age. You know, you get to a certain place where, you know, you're running out of time to achieve those aspirations. And so you don't have the same level of time to sit around and kumbaya.
Right.
So I think it's a combination of age
Well, and you don't have time. I told a teacher one time that she was an umbrella of negativity, and I don't tell teachers off. I've never done that, but in the last 2 years, I just don't have time. If I have to go up to the school and deal with something that I shouldn't be dealing with, I just was like, she was so rude and ugly, I just didn't have time. I just said, you're an umbrella of negativity, and I don't like it.
And you were direct. And you know, it's kind of interesting because in today's day and time where people's feelings are much more sensitive than it used to be, it's not always a good thing, because you can say something and it's direct and it's honest and you don't mean anything other than I need this result. But if somebody's extra sensitive, it can cause some issues.
Right, exactly. Well, what about your rose for the week?
So the rose is, I have a distinct memory of me in the past, which I was very sweet.
Being all chill?
I was all chill back then. So I still have the memory. It hasn't gone away.
Well, I don't think it's a negative. I don't know that you need to think it's a negative.
How about you? What's your thorn and your rose?
My thorn is to do with medical stuff. I have crapola and knees from 30 years of dance, and every 6 months I get injections, viscous injections, and I have to go in and tell them that they're working, they've worn off, I need another one, another round, and they do once a week for 3 weeks. Well, this time we haven't met our deductible yet, so I didn't know that each administrative fee was $113.
Ouch.
So they had told me one time before, if I wanted to come in and do it all at one time, I could. So I called them back and said, hey, I could save $226 if I do it all at one time. So she's got to go back and ask the doctor, then they've got to re-ask the insurance that they're going to approve it that way, instead of the doctor just saying, yeah, that works for me, come in one time. You know, if I have to do it three times, fine. But now I'm sitting here thinking, is it better for me physically to do it three mm-hmm. times, or does it matter medically? If it matters medically, I'll pay the fee. If it doesn't, why do I have to go in three times? You know, but I feel uncertain about what the right thing to do is in terms of what's better for my knees and what's cheaper.
Yeah. Yeah. What makes more sense with your time and your money? I mean, those are your resources. It's your job to steward them. And if your time and your money has been taken to do something that could be done in one time versus three times, why wouldn't you do that?
Exactly. Exactly. So that's kind of a thorny thing. I hate dealing with insurance. Mm. But, you know, what are you going to do? I guess the rose is I have insurance.
Yes.
And a lot of people right now are struggling without it. So I have insurance, and I have decent insurance, and all my kids have insurance. And so I guess I'll just celebrate that and, you know, deal with it.
So much to be said about gratefulness. You know?
Well, it is. It is. And without it, I wouldn't be able to do these things. And I'm getting to a point of dysfunction with that, with one knee in particular, where I can't walk well, you know, and I'm not old enough for that.
So, I agree.
I'm trying to avoid a knee replacement, so I'm trying real hard to take care of them. But, you know, I don't want to be limping around and feel old when I still should have a few good years left. So.
Few good dancing years also.
Well,
maybe not the
anymore.
Same kind.
Yeah. I can stand in place and do a little jig, but that's about it.
More than I can do.
Oh, yeah. We're both two people in the same boat right now, aren't we?
Mm-hmm.
Painful injuries that hopefully will improve.
Exactly.
All right. So with that, we are going to go to our first commercial break. And when we come back, we will talk to somebody very exciting and experienced in the franchise industry, and we can't wait to talk to her.
Yes.
This is Oracle, providers of spot-on profiles, the gold standard of assessment tools that assure you're selecting the right franchisees every time. Unlike DISC or others that simply gauge personality or communication styles, Zoracle's spot-on assessments are all franchise-specific and based upon seven sciences that nail the results each and every time. Your prospects simply answer a few questions online, and like magic, Zoracle's algorithms scientifically slice, dice, and analyze their thresholds for risk, their business acumen, and even their propensity for single or multi-unit ownership. Zoracle's spot-on analysis is like having a crystal ball, but there's no hoodoo here. It's all based upon science that flawlessly determines franchisee, franchisor compatibility, and accurately predicts performance. Why don't you schedule a demo today and take a complimentary look and see for yourself? It's the closest thing to a sure thing. Zoracle, spot-on assessments based on science, but delivering results that seem simply magical. Check them out at www.zoracleprofiles.com.
Welcome back to Where Passion and Purpose Collide. We are here with our guest. Rebecca, why don't you tell us who we have?
We have a fabulous guest today, Elizabeth Margaret McClay. She's been a professional business coach and trainer for more than 12 years. She's worked with business owners, leaders, and teams worldwide in areas of communication, talent management, process improvement, customer service, strategic planning. The bottom line is all about getting peak performance. Additionally, she holds positions at Focal Point Organization as the Director of Onboarding Certification and Support, and she's also the Director of the Assessment Center and the Certification Trainer and Coach Practice Mentor. So Margaret, bottom line, assists her clients to be smarter, faster, and find better ways of doing things to get the results that they want. So welcome, Margaret. We are so excited about having you.
Well, thank you, Rebecca, so much for having me. It's great to be here with you and Elizabeth today. We're excited to talk about lots of things.
Yes, we are too.
Yeah.
And, you know, in our conversation earlier this week, you started to tell us a little bit about how you got where you are. But I was particularly fascinated with how even as a child, you had an industrious spirit. So can you tell us, our folks, a little bit about your childhood and ultimately how that kind of played into who you became?
Oh, absolutely. It was really fun to think back to what was going on as a kid. But I was always taught from my grandparents, my parents, and where I went to school that I could do anything that I put my mind to. And that sort of launched me off into, okay, I'm going to see if that really works. And, you know, I was thinking back to, you know, some of the things that were a bit innovative and sort of industrious. My best friend and I, when we were around 10 years old, decided that there were no girl acolytes who could carry the flags and the candles and everything at church. And so we went campaigning to the stodgy old head of that decision making and said, we want to be acolytes. And he said, no, there's never been girls. And we said, well, I'm not going to leave you alone. And so you say yes. And we got it. We ultimately were the first girls to do that. And that led me to a long time of singing in the choir and, you know, doing all those things that I love. But alongside with that, which was more of a volunteer thing, I was also industrious in terms of the profit side.
Mm-hmm.
Because I found some things that I could do for my grandmother, like cater her cocktail parties and pass around the hors d'oeuvres and babysit for, I think I got a quarter for an hour of work. But, you know, it was a good start. And I was always proud to be able to put those quarters in the UNICEF box when it came to that time. But, you know, it was interesting that even at that time, my grandfather taught me how to bake. And so I was constantly baking things and bringing stuff to bake sales. It was really, it was pretty fun. And as I got older and I moved into other areas, I remembered after we had that conversation that I studied voice and I loved to sing and always was in choirs at school and at church. And I remember at about 19 years old, there a big church, not the one I went to, but a great big one, was looking for a new, you know, lead soprano.
Wow. And
for their, I didn't know it was a professional choir. And I said, I'm going to go try out for that. And
wow.
So I charged on over there and couldn't read music or play the piano or anything, but went on in there and the lady was very nice and humored me and everything and, you know, let me move on and said, no, you're not quite the right one. But it was kind of interesting. And the other thing I remembered was, you know, when did I want to be a coach?
Mm-hmm.
And I actually coached the women's lacrosse team at my college after I graduated from college. And I'd totally forgotten about that. But I think I've had that coaching spirit mm-hmm. for a long time. Mm-hmm. So when this became an option for me, I think it was a natural progression to go and be in a role like this.
Wow.
Did you find growing up with that kind of personality that people came to you for solutions?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I was always pulling along my friends and stuff along with me. But yeah, I think I was the kid in the class that was, you know, people were kind of drawn toward. And, you know, there are people like that who, if they trust you and you're a good mm-hmm. listener and, you know, those kind of relationships really evolve and people do. It's kind of like a magnet. And I notice it now with certain coaches in, you know, a lot of them who have that thing, they've always had it. They've always been the ones who were kind of people were drawn to mm-hmm. to talk to.
Well, and I just wonder how much that plays into pushing you down a path, because I found that when I got divorced, I got through it pretty well. My children got through it pretty well. And I became like the go-to person. Everybody in town who was getting divorced, if they didn't know me, somebody who did would refer them to me. And I became this, here's how I did it. I don't know if it worked for you or not, but and it pushed me into this path of writing this book about my horrible online dates later in life. So I wonder if that pushes you toward a path. Do you think it helps guide you to where you are now? Because I think when people solicit from you and you feel like you know the answers and it kind of leads you in the direction of being someone who guides people, Yeah. I just wonder how much of a role you think that played.
You know what? I think it really does. And I know for me, I went on, I had a really wonderful career in the fashion industry. And I did all kinds of things, traveled all over the world, was in a, ended up in a very pioneering position. And I didn't know about coaching until I got an executive coach myself. That I was always destined to do that. And I did things along those lines until that opportunity was right in front of me. And I sort of saw, yes, this is really what I want to do. And, you know, when I thought about your, you know, purpose, passion, profit, and relationships, when I think about the purpose and the passion, those two things, I mean, they all tie together, but being able to go in and add value in a far-reaching way mm-hmm. is such a strong purpose for me. And I know mm-hmm. that when I was in the role that I was in a company for many years, almost 17 years before I moved on, and 16 of those years were great because I really felt like I was contributing and having some impact, and you know, I was involved in a lot of things. The last year was awful, and I just couldn't connect. And so when the company, you know, was downsized and let us all, you know, go on to our next stage in our careers, at first I was just devastated. And then I realized this is the best thing that could ever happen to me because now I found the next thing that I love even more, and it's even better. And I found years ago, my mom brought me this big trunk, like a toy chest with all stuff. And she said, okay, that's it. This is going out of our house now. You've got to deal with it. And I started going through it, and I found something that I think in like fifth grade, we had to write down what we wanted to do when we grew up. And I wanted to be a teacher. And I think it's really ironic because in some way, shape, or form, throughout my whole career, I kind of have been in some way, shape, or form, whether it was through mentoring at the local high school or whether it was, you know, a role that I had in business and now as a coach. It's not a teacher per se, but it is that role where you know, get to inspire people to be the best that they can be. And hey, making money doing that? Wow.
Love that.
Love that, right?
Yeah, it's funny because when we think teacher, we do think high school teacher, elementary ed, professor, and we kind of have a stereotype of it. But there are many roles that allow us to inspire and cause people to think and a push beyond their normal boundaries and to grow. And coaching is a great example of just that, where you are teaching, encouraging, inspiring, pushing, and doing those kinds of things. Which brings me to another topic. You've had incredible success as a coach, and you've taught many other coaches how to coach. And I know one of the big reasons people come engage a coach, whether it's for themselves or for their teams, is A, to get clear on where they want to go, but also to have some level of accountability. Can you address the importance of that or any advice that you would have around that whole accountability piece?
Absolutely. And one of the things I learned when I had my own coach was that rather than telling me what to do or kind of guiding, you know, to driving me down a path, she always asked me questions, who, what, where, when, why, how questions. So I couldn't get out of it with a yes or a no, you know, in a moment of conversation. And the thing I learned myself from doing that was I usually knew the answers if I could have some help digging down and kind of working through and talking through it. And that's really the essence of coaching, is by asking questions that, you know, dig deep and take people out of their comfort zone a little bit. We, in Focal Point, we call it asking two questions past the comfort zone. What's comfortable for the one asking, the coach asking, and out of the comfort zone of the one replying? But that's when kind of can dig through the surface and mm-hmm. get to what's really important and what someone really wants and what they really think, and get some thinking out of the box. And that's often where the answers come from. And so when someone owns the answer and it's their initiative, it's their plan, and they are passionate about it, then they take total accountability and they're empowered to be responsible. And that is, you know, that for me is the big aha moment, both with my clients and with the coaches that I work with every day who come into the franchise and are building up their businesses. And you know, just, you know, the difference between telling versus asking is really, really powerful. And mm-hmm. I've seen it applied in so many other aspects of life that where it's also effective with kids. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. When they come up with the ideas and they go clean your room, having a discussion about what impact is it going to have on you if your room is cleaned up versus a mess? And, you know, kind of going down that road. But it can be very, very simple things. And just the positive confidence that someone goes off with that, you know, wow, I've come to this decision on my own and now I'm going to make it happen. They really own it. They really, really own it.
Brilliant. Oh. Absolutely brilliant. My mind is going at this point, how many of our stuck states or not achieving certain outcomes is simply because we're not asking the right questions of ourselves to get to the core, and to have a facilitator, a professional coach that is there to ask the questions that maybe we are forgetting to ask ourselves or don't even know what to ask.
Don't even know we're afraid to ask.
Yeah.
Because some of this stuff is scary. And, mm-hmm. You make a great point. Asking questions is great, but the right questions are even more important, because mm-hmm. leading somebody through a series, you know, helping them think through something and talk through it, it can really lead to something interesting and really important. And mm-hmm. You know, one of the clients I had at one point I worked with him for almost 5 years, but he wasn't local. So we met via Skype, and we would get into our meeting, and I would ask him, how are things going? And he would start talking, and he would talk and talk and talk. But every once in a while, he would say, well, what do you think? Or am I on the right track? Or he'd ask me something and I'd come back with a question that kept things moving. And at the end of 60 minutes or 90 minutes, whatever it was, he would say, wow, I've got my plan. We kind of summarize it up. And his way of getting to the conclusion or what the next steps were to be able to talk out loud mm-hmm. and have somebody kind of keeping him on track. And he was just able to do some amazing, amazing things and would always say, oh, that was the best conversation. And I didn't have to do it. I didn't do much. I just asked him a question.
Right.
And I find that's very common with the coaches mm-hmm. in our organization, that it's just getting the, you know, the wheels turning that starts people down a trail that really is beneficial.
True.
Yeah. Well, and I think having that person, that coach, to bounce something off of, a lot of times you know what the outcome should be,
right?
It might be the question of how do I get there? Does this sound okay out loud, or does this sound ridiculous out loud? Or,
right.
You know,
exactly.
Are there other alternatives I haven't thought of? And I've done it with my children. I had one who had a struggle with a relationship. My husband and I are both divorced. She was trying to decide, should I go meet up with my mother who was giving her a hard time? And I would ask the same questions every time. Do you want to? Yes or no? Yes. Then what are those parameters? Do you need to drive your own car? Do you need to meet out in public? Do you need to go to the house? And finally I said, do you know I'm asking the same three questions every single time? And she went, no. I said, write them down. Because you need to start doing this for yourself as you, you know, become an adult. But But I think that that third, that outside perspective sometimes hits on those questions that, that are in your head, but you have not articulated to yourself.
But you have, that's really true. It's interesting that the, you know, the both divorce, I'm divorced and my husband is as well. And he has brought two children into the marriage, and we've been married for a long time. But when one of them, the daughter, Tyler, was really small, she and I were having a conversation that was a very difficult conversation. We were in a restaurant and we were, it was after school. We were kind of waiting for the other kids to come out. And she and I are having this conversation, and I, you know, I just was asking her questions because I knew that it was something she needed to talk about, but it wasn't any, it was a tough conversation for her and some tough things going on in her mind. And she left and went to go get something to drink. And there was a man at a table a little ways over the way, and he leaned over and he said, "You handled that really well."
Yeah.
And it just, it verified for me that instead of telling someone for putting your opinion or judgment on the table, sometimes just letting them say, you know, helping them to get the things out on the table can be really, really important. And this is what so many business owners struggle with, because they don't necessarily, they're owners of the business. They're at the top of the food chain.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't necessarily have someone to talk these things through with. And, you know, we know throughout history, you know, kings and rulers and, you know, the military, they've always had trusted advisors. And bringing this to a small business owner, a medium-sized business owner who's wearing lots of hats all day long and has all these things that they're trying to keep on track and, you know, fighting fires a lot of the time, having, you know, an hour a week or whatever is determined to be the engagement, to just sit down and completely focus on them and their business and what's on their mind and sort of getting things out on the table that can sometimes be really tough, difficult, or can be really, really just an incredible benefit. And it's rewarding for us as coaches too, to know that we can help somebody to, you know, to get through those things and get on to where they want to be and hit the results that they're looking for, whatever those might happen to be.
Yeah. Well, I'm one of those small business owners, as you know, and I'm also like the gentleman you were coaching. Many of us as entrepreneurs, we think as we talk, right? So as we talk, we're formulating the idea. And the more we talk and the more you actively engage and listen and ask questions, the more that idea, you know, solidifies. So there are those individuals that I process outside. It's not in here. I have to talk about it. I have to have someone to bounce it off of, that collaborative effort, that critical eye that a coach brings, not critical in terms of you're doing that wrong, but critical in that, did you look at this? What about that? Kind of thing. And I love what you said about once it's out of their mouth and they've kind of drilled down, the accountability is almost second nature. It's like now they sort of committed to it. But the other piece, which is a valuable piece to the coaching, is I've verbalized it, but I've verbalized it to someone else that I'm going to talk to next week.
Right. And they're going to remember, right?
They're going to pin me down and say, how's that coming, right?
That's really true. And actually in the coaching process that I use, that we use in Focal Point, that is actually the first thing that we discuss when we start a coaching session every week. So what were your wins? What did you not get done? Here's the actions you committed to. Let's talk a little bit about how things went. And I think the feedback is often that, you know, it's that accountability is really, really important. And what you said, knowing that a week later or 2 weeks later, whatever it is, whatever you said you were going to do, someone's going to hold you to it. And we all need help with that, right?
Of course.
Things happen and you can justify away anything. And, you know, it's not to be the, oh, you didn't do it, but it's that reassurance that, you know what, I'm going to be able to share what I did. No one's going to scold me if I didn't do. We're going to talk about why it didn't happen. And the other thing that's kind of cool about it is that there are two perspectives, because there's the perspective of somebody who owns a business, and, you know, they know their business and they know their craft, and, you know, they're in it day to day. And then there's the perspective of the coach who, in my case of, you know, coaching related to business, who comes in and has some perspective about my, you know, my past experience, but also what are good business practices that need to be in place. And sometimes someone started a business, they love what they're doing, they're passionate about something, they're really good at it, but they never learned what are the key things that need to be in place for a business to run effectively. They might not know what's the best way to communicate with employees, or, you know, how to manage someone, or to be a better manager, or to delegate, to take some things off their plate, et cetera, et cetera. And by having, you know, a perspective to come in to provide some insights and sort of highlights and you know, best practices, processes for those kind of things, you know, can really ease some of that stress of the day-to-day of all this stuff is going on, and I actually don't know how to do everything. And so I think it's powerful, the combination of the two.
I was just giggling. I was just giggling, Elizabeth, to myself as Margaret's talking about this. That's kind of that passion without the profit, right?
Right.
So, just the excitement of the business, and because we love it, we continue, but we're not showing profit. So a coach can show us how to put in, you know, until whatever those pieces are that are missing. I'm sorry, I interrupted you, Elizabeth.
No, no, I was just going to say, I went through a decision with the magazine recently, and, and how I wanted to change course or stay the course. And, you know, you feel like an island, because I'm a very small business that has only been in existence since November. But it ended up that Rebecca and I have done all of these things together, and she was somebody I trusted to bounce things off of and kind of help guide me through that and give me the validation that I needed to make some decisions for myself and the magazine. And we actually have some exciting announcements coming up over the next few months, partly because of the relationship we've built and the guidance that we've had. But if I hadn't had that, you can second guess yourself. Like, I know how to write. I know what I know how to do. But there are certain things I know I have much less experience at. I don't know. So, and we were talking to Laura Spalding of Spalding Decon, and she talked about a strength is hiring out your weaknesses. So sometimes recognizing that that's not your thing and somebody else might be able to do it better. So do you find yourself guiding in that direction as well?
Absolutely, because, you know, we can't all be good at everything.
Right.
And I think a lot of people beat themselves up and really focus on the things they don't do well or they don't like doing.
Yeah.
And we know that people are able to take the things that they do well and they love to a much higher level if they focus on them than they are to take something that's at the bottom of the heap and try to build it. And, you know, one of the things that that I've realized has been super, super helpful in getting that out on the table and helping people to understand that you don't have to be good at everything. There are skills that can be learned, and there are things that we need to learn. And we know that attitude is critically important, but it's okay to delegate or to find a way around the stuff that you're not so great at. But, you know, there's some really great assessment tools that highlight so well, you know, what are the strengths, and, you know, how can we then have a conversation around how are you really going to leverage these strengths? And then what are the things that, you know, you're not so great at doing or that you don't like doing so much? And how can we figure out a way to get them done if they need to be done, and, you know, find another person or another way to get around that, or perhaps build a skill? But I think the assessment tools are really nice. Some like DISC, for example, is a really nice way to get some of those things on the table in a non-confrontational sort of, you know, upbeat, positive, you know, here it is, and then begin those conversations. I just started working with a new client, actually in out of the U.S., outside of the U.S., in Ghana, and the issue that he put on the table was
that, you know, there's certain things he really likes to do in his business, and then there's a bunch of things he really doesn't like to do. Mm-hmm. And he really wants to spend the time on the things he likes and try to figure out a better way to get the stuff done that he doesn't like to do. So first we had to identify what those were and then start talking through, you know, based on the people you have on the team, et cetera. But I could see as we were going through this conversation, he kind of started, you know, head down, and you could see the energy was low. And as he started realizing that there's going to be a way for me to get motivated again in my business and do the stuff I really loved, and that, you know, what got me motivated to do it in the beginning, I could see him perk up. He started sitting up straighter. His face lightened up, his eyes, he started smiling. And it was amazing that, so you could just see that the pressure was off now. Yeah. We were just talking about it. It was kind of interesting.
If you know your weaknesses, like you said, through an assessment tool at Zoracle, some of the markers we look at are the emotional and social intelligence scores, as well as the competency scores, and there's a lot of other good tools out there. But once you know what your strengths are and you focus on those strengths and you hire to your weaknesses, that passion comes back. It's like, oh, like you said, what this gentleman went through was, oh, you mean if I focus on what I'm good at and find a way to come around those areas that I'm weak? Now, sometimes we just have to learn things.
Exactly. Of
right?
course.
That's life.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But this is so important in business and in life to know thyself, right?
Know thyself. Yeah. Well, and Rebecca, you know, just to the, you know, that the Zoracle assessment, that is, it's so awesome, and I'm so glad that we're using it in Focal Point now, because that fit issue is so important. Yes, it's critically important for franchising and somebody buying a business. The concept goes so far beyond, because, you know, it goes into a role that, you know, somebody's going into when they're taking a job and really thinking about, you know, is this a role that's conducive for me or not? And sometimes business owners are hiring someone because they like them, or they just need to throw a body at it. And then they're frustrated later when the person's not performing. And the person's probably, you know, often
just frustrated.
Frustrated because this isn't, I don't like doing this, or I'm not good at doing this, or get me out of here. And so being able to have those conversations early on and to look at people and value them for what they're really good at and what they bring to the table, and, you know, help them to be in a role that they're going to succeed in, as opposed to, you know, ultimately crash and burn, is just such a more
blessing.
It is a blessing to everybody, right? It's really a great thing. So,
Elizabeth, we always do this. We get so caught up in these conversations, we lose track of time. So thank you, Margaret, for joining us today. We do need now to go and learn more about one of our sponsors. Thank you, Margaret.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
The Franchise Woman is a bi-monthly digital magazine that empowers women as they navigate the franchising industry by providing relevant news, tools, advice, and inspiration. We are a resource for women who are seeking to own their own businesses, improve their existing businesses, find creative solutions, and take advantage of franchise opportunities. We feature women in the business who best exemplify our ideals and have something to teach our readers. In addition to our exclusive articles relating to the female entrepreneur, we also feature brands that are geared for women. Women have become the fastest growing sector in business ownership and have become a powerful, influenceable force fueling the economy. The Franchise Woman will give you the news that is relevant to you to help you navigate the path of successful franchise ownership. By women, for women, and about women, we are the Franchise Woman. Join us today at www.thefranchisewoman.com.
Welcome back to Where Passion and Purpose Collide, Women in the Know.
We discuss everything from politics and policy to relationships and marketing. We talk about franchise growth and difficulties between franchisees and franchisors. Today's topic is about best techniques to keep people accountable. So thoughts on that? We have lots of thoughts on that, don't we?
Well, you know, I thought some of what Margaret pointed out, that if someone is asking themselves, or they have a coach or someone they're bouncing ideas off, they're asking the right questions about what do you want and what's preventing you from getting there, just asking the right questions, that you get to an answer that ultimately says, here's what I want to do, and here's what I'm willing to do, and here's what I'm committed to doing. So her point was fascinating to me, that accountability is actually automatic if you yourself came to the conclusion that that thing needed to be done. It's kind of the idea of, let's use weight loss or stop smoking. If somebody is telling you you need to stop smoking, that's different than if you say, you know, this is what's going on and this is what I really want, and you come to that conclusion. So you ultimately make the decision and the commitment yourself, but sometimes it requires having someone to bounce it off to see how important it is to you. And once you figure it out, then it's like you're kind of self-accountable. And I thought that was kind of a beautiful way how she described it.
Well, it is. And you know, she does the business coaching, and people hire her for that purpose. But, you know, a lot of times people can't afford it or don't have access or not ready for that yet. And one thing I've done a lot of is with two particular people separately, has had accountability partners where we would talk typically about once a month. Sometimes it would be once a week if a lot was going on, and just say, here are my goals that I want to accomplish before the next time we talk. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? I had one of them, no question was ever too stupid. Like one time I forgot something completely dumb about email, my email program.
Mm-hmm.
And I called them and I was like, tell me how I do this again. And she's like, well, okay. I was like, sorry, I'm just having one of those moments. So to have somebody who's not going to judge you for when your brain just can't function properly, I think makes you just have the freedom to ask something that you may worry that somebody else might think is stupid.
I think we
create those groups for ourselves a lot of times just instinctively, don't you think?
I think so too, but I think your point is, we might naturally do that to create accountability partners for our health and for our business and for our spiritual journeys or whatever. But I think we also have to consciously do that, especially if we're struggling in a particular area, is to find an accountability partner. And I would suggest that if your goals and your aspirations are the same goals and aspirations of a larger group, that would be even better. If you are plugged into a community where everyone has one goal, which is to create music or to have more fun or to make more money or to, you know, travel or whatever it is, when you have a common goal, common vision, common purpose, and you're part of a community, you kind of inspire one another. Never mind, you're going to be watching somebody else achieve whatever it is that you're wanting, that's going to inspire you to step up and do that too. So I totally agree with you. It's about finding accountability partners or coach, or becoming a part of a community where you can do it as a group.
Well, it is. And I think, you know, I've done so much advocacy in different areas that those groups tend to naturally form. You seek each other out because you are all working toward a very explicit common goal. I think sometimes in business, your goals feel more personal, and they are, but that doesn't mean they're outside of someone else's experience. You know, you might have the same goals to achieve certain numbers of new clients each month, or certain, you know, financial goals over the course of a year, or whatever it is. So you can find that commonality, and some groups are easier than others, you know, to find that common goal. But I think when you touch on that and you hit on that, it can be so productive because you really do check the list off. And we had an agenda, and you go back and look at it and be like, okay, I did this, I didn't do this, and I'm going to have to tell her, you know. So I think, you know, if you can get a coach, get one.
Get one. Absolutely.
If not, you can make your own. You know?
Yeah. I mean, because when we were talking to Margaret, she was teaching coaching folks long before she did it as a licensee.
Mm-hmm.
So there are folks in our sphere that do that. I mean, you know, two business owners come together. One has more marketing experience. One has better sales skills or operational skills. Both have a similar goal. You know, if those two people are coming together, they're going to learn from each other. They're going to inspire one another. And to your question, I think by that very process, they're going to keep each other accountable for no other reason than I verbalized it to you. And now you're going to be asking me about it. I better get that thing done.
Exactly. You know, I thought my rose for the week should have been this. I talked to my daughter the other day, and she said she called my son and said, "Hey, Luke, what are you doing?" And he said, "I'm writing down my goals for the year on my whiteboard." And I just wanted to jump for joy. I was like,
"Yeah!"
Because he's putting them out where he can see them. He's got he thinks he can graduate a semester early. He's got it all one after the other, so that he can just knock it out. So I think, you know, articulating those things, even if it's to yourself on your own whiteboard that someone else may or may not see, puts it out there. You know?
And it's right there, right in your face.
He's going to look at it every time he walks by the wall and say, yep, got to stay on track.
This is perfect. And I'm sure those that are listening to us are also thinking of many wonderful ways to be more accountable and to achieve your goals. And if you have any ideas, send them to Elizabeth at thefranchisewoman.com. We'll field those and maybe share those in future shows. But for now, we need to wrap up the Woman in the Know segment and go to one of our sponsors.
Pillars of Franchising, broadcasting the secrets of building a successful franchise. Join Ray Pillar and Fred McMurray as they talk to franchisees, franchisors, and the franchise professionals who assist them. Listen live on Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern on pillarsoffranchising.com. Call in with your questions to Pillars of Franchising at 323-580-5755.
All right. We are officially at the Ask and Beck Liz show. So welcome. Here we have no topic that is off limits. We want to answer your questions about business, about life, and everything in between. And all you have to do is send an email to ask@beckandliz.com. That's ask@beckandliz.com. We'll take your questions and then we'll pull one out of the hat and we'll answer it in upcoming shows. So, Elizabeth, this is the question for the day.
Okay.
All right. Ready?
Yep.
So why do people not do what they're supposed to do? Why do they like procrastinate?
That's a head scratcher, isn't it? Why do they procrastinate? Why don't they do what they're supposed to do? I think if we knew the clear and defined answer for that, we would have solved a lot of people's problems. But we have theories, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have thoughts. You know, I think one of them is fear of failure. If you don't try, no one can say you failed. You know, I mean, with teenagers, it could be, if I don't do the dishes, someone else will do them for me, you know?
I can get out of that.
I can get out of this. I think that applies to everyone across the board in life. If you leave something at work too long, maybe someone else will pick it up. But, you know, it's a huge question and it's a real problem because when people don't do, like for me, with the magazine, I rely on writers who say they will do something by a certain time. And if I don't get that by a certain time and we're in the design phase of the magazine, that causes a real problem. So we either need to get to the bottom of it or decide that this isn't something that person is really interested in doing.
Right.
So what do you have theories about?
Well, you know, it's interesting. A few years back, when I was working for Sendent, which is this massive franchisor with dozens of different brands under it, they brought in this trainer that did leadership training. And he made a comment that has changed my life. And he said, there are only two reasons people do not do what they're supposed to do. Whether, you know, I promise myself I'm going to do
exercise today and I don't do it. Or in, someone's supposed to get you some copy or graphics and they don't do it. So there's only two reasons people don't do what they, one is they don't know how, right? And that we can solve, right? We can teach them, we can in some way train them. The second reason is they don't wanna. He didn't say want to. They don't wanna.
I don't wanna do it. And I'm
they
not
don't
going
wanna.
To.
And which brings up, why do they not wanna? And I think you hit on one of them. It's fear. Fear of being embarrassed, fear of failure. And the second thing I think is it doesn't have enough value. It's not attached to something that is super important to us, the highest value. We tend to do things and behave in certain ways based on our hierarchy of values. And so if what we have to do isn't amongst those top, you know, 3 to 5 values, we have a tendency to procrastinate. We have a tendency to not wanna.
Right? There's so many things I don't wanna do. But I think the thing is, when you feel uncertain, I do a lot of writing for different people. And sometimes if I don't feel like I have a good handle on what's needed, I'll put that one off and do the ones I do know first.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's not a problem. If the deadline is well within reason, it's fine. But if it's pushing up on a deadline and I've put that off, now I'm really under stress because I probably should have asked sooner, hey, I need more information. I don't really get it. You know, I don't understand what you need from me. Or if it's a topic just outside of your normal realm. You know, I mean, those things can be intimidating no matter what level of business you're in. So I think sometimes it is that. And the solution for that is be bold enough to ask the question.
Yeah. So that goes back to what the trainer said. Basically, you didn't know how. You didn't know what the expectation mm-hmm. was. You didn't have the parameters for whatever. So it's not that you didn't want to. You clearly wanted to, and you have the skills. This was, I don't know how, I don't know the end result. I don't know what to do to get there. So you, like you said, have the courage to reach out and figure out what the expectations are. You and I were talking earlier about that. Sometimes with our employees or children or whatever, they don't do things simply because they don't know exactly what our expectations are mm-hmm. of them.
Right. And I think in terms of being the receiver of information, you have to be told information in a way that you understand. So communication, that's why it's so complicated. Not everyone understands things in the same way. The same delivery for one person doesn't work with another person. And I have a whole bunch of different writers who communicate very differently and have some want to know way ahead of time what their topic is for the next issue. Some put it together in a week. It doesn't matter. But learning the nuance of how they work best, you know, I think applies. And I told you the story of when my children were little. I had 3 boys that were 2 years apart. When they were like 3, 5, and 7 or 4, 6, and 8, we would go to the grocery store. And before we got out of the car every single time, I said, all right, here's the expectation. You will be quiet. You will hold hands. You will not grab things off the shelf. You will not run. You will not jump. You will not hug, kiss, touch, or wrestle to the floor. When we get back in the car, do whatever you want. But if I would forget to set those expectations, the behavior throughout the grocery store was dramatically worse. So I began to realize it really does work. Mm-hmm. And that applies throughout the course of your life. If I set expectations for writers and I try real hard to say, okay, just checking in, you've got a week left. I don't want to wait until the last day. But to be respectful of how they need to receive that information and how far in advance works for them. Because sometimes they just get stressed out not knowing, and then they still might not do it until the week before.
Right.
But they have the peace of mind knowing, and they can be thinking about what it is they've got to do. And it's on them, not they're not waiting around on me. So I think learning people's needs is critical when you're leading a team.
Yeah. So clearly communicating the expectations, keeping in mind that who you're working with may have different communication style than we have. So we have to make sure they know what's expected, that they know how to do it, that they want to do it. There's a reason they should be doing it. Maybe it's just for a paycheck. We'll ultimately have people not procrastinate and not do. And it's interesting, as you're talking about that, what came up for me was this, again, a basic law of psychology, that most of our disappointments come from uncommunicated expectations.
Mm-hmm.
So our employees, our spouses, our children are disappointing us, and we're feeling betrayed and hurt and angry, and how is it that they didn't know, and why is this late? But many of those disappointments are coming from uncommunicated expectations. And I think you hit it home when you said, kids, this is what I'm expecting.
It's real simple. Do it. We will get a Hot Wheel on the way out the door.
I'm gonna have to see how I can apply that to my team. You know, you're going to get a Hot Wheel if you do.
You're going to get a Hot Wheel. It was a dollar at the grocery store. And if they were good, they got a Hot Wheel. That was the reward. But I think one thing we don't think of as leaders of teams is that we have influence over someone's procrastination by setting expectations, by communicating. And instead of just getting frustrated and saying, that guy never turns anything in on time, that person always is later.
Lets me down.
Whatever. Instead of that, maybe you have a conversation and say, I don't think maybe I'm communicating clearly. Let's figure this out. What is the better way for you to work? Does it help me? Should we use Google Drive and I put you a list? Should I email it to you more directly? Do we put it on a calendar? You know, you tell me how you need to receive it and I will give it to you that way. And that makes everybody feel a little bit more in control, I think.
And accountable.
And accountable.
You know, as long as we have that one other factor, which is they want to do it.
Right,
that there's some reason, intrinsic reason that they want to do it.
And if they don't, they just need to have
exactly. Then we help them. Life. We help them.
Yeah.
All right, I love how we solve the world's problems in just a matter of 10 minutes, Elizabeth. But we do need to sign off. Thank you, everyone, for joining us today. Where passion and purpose collide, profits are made, and relationships are forged. This is Beck and Liz signing off and wishing you another purpose-filled and profitable week. Mm-hmm.